Hi, this is Jason Warner Smith, and you are listening to Variety Radio Online.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Variety Radio Online. This is your host, Amber. Today is April 16th. It is a Wednesday afternoon, and we are excited to have Jason Warner Smith, who plays, he has a recurring role on the Sundance series Rectify as Wendell. Hello, Jason, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Amber. How are you today?
I'm doing great. We're going to jump into some questions, ask you a few things about the show, let you talk about your other projects.
All right.
But I want to know, if somebody has never seen this show, how would you describe your character for them?
Well, I play Wendell Jelks, and I am a convicted death row inmate in the same prison as the protagonist, Daniel Holden, who's played by Aiden Young. And I'm like his next-door neighbor, and I'm the neighbor that you never wanted to have.
Yeah.
Wendell is basically your good old-fashioned psychopathic rapist, murderer, just all-around nasty fellow. And, and he is a true psychopath. He has all the skill with emotion. He has none. He doesn't understand emotion. He doesn't feel it. And he gets his joy from messing with Daniel. And that's basically his, it's all he's got right now. And that's what he does. That's his job. That's what he does.
So you mentioned that Wendell's a character, a criminal. He's a bad dude. So it's kind of a bit of a dark character. Is it hard for you to get into that mind frame when playing a role like that?
Well, it's not really hard. The thing about characters like this is, anytime you see someone that's playing a character like this, they're not really, at least you hope they're not really like that. And a lot of the acting study that I've done has been kind of in the Uta Hagen realm of things, what some people like to call it method acting, using sense memory and things like that, and that's kind of how I do my acting. And trouble is, I don't really have any true experience to draw on, thank God, of what he's really like. So a lot of it is, down to your imagination. And of course, the writing makes it really easy because the writers like Ray McKinnon and Scott Teams, and Michael Fuller, the rest of the folks who Evan Dunsky, et cetera, who've written for this show, make the dialogue. Mainly Ray McKinnon, of course, has made it very easy to get into the mind of someone who's psychopathic like this. But you have to, there are instances where you're just talking about, if you've seen the show, where you're talking about just the character of Wendell's talking about just really nasty things and being very mean, and you have to use your imagination and come up with substitutions for things like that, make up stories in your head. Very little real life experience to draw on there. But you think about a character like this, someone who's it's an easy association to make, and it's kind of a cop out, but it's easy for explanation purposes. Someone like Adolf Hitler, let's say. I've never met the man, thank God, but he didn't think he was a bad guy. He thought he was doing the right thing. And Wendell does not see himself as a bad guy. He's not twisting his mustache and I'm going to get you.
Right.
He's just being Wendell. And unfortunately for, Daniel, he's right there poking him with sticks every day, and he's just trying to find some way to get him to interact with him, because most of the time Daniel doesn't. He ignores him. It affects Daniel, but, I don't know that because I'm on the other side of a wall. When you see the show, or you've seen it, and those, when they do see it, we're in solitary confinement, but we're right next to each other, and so I don't get to see his face. I can just hear his voice or his the pauses and the in-between. So the few times when he does interact with me, it's like, oh, okay, good. A vein of gold. Let's mine this. Let's see how far I can go. How far can I go with this? And until he stops or breaks or, tries to get me back or whatever like that. So I hope that answered your question.
Well, that definitely answered it. And as someone that has watched the show, I kind of thought about this last night when I was going over questions, and it's kind of like when, or it's kind of like Daniel's in the middle, and he's got the angel on one side and the devil on the other, because he's got his friend on one side, and he's got you, and he's got you on the other, your character on the other, and it's almost like, you know, that's what's pounding at his shoulders at all times. And I believe that Wendell play is a very important part in the mental state of Daniel. And I'd like to know if you agree with that, or can maybe elaborate on that.
Yeah, well, absolutely, it does. You know, it's funny, I've talked with some of the writers about that, and you know, and as any actor who has a recurring type role, you're always wondering, like, how long am I going to get to hang around, you know? And I'm talking to the writers, like, so, you know, what's the episode 8 and 9 looking like? Am I going to be still here, you know? They're like, and the good news is the answer that I've been getting lately is like, oh, yeah, you know, he's a part of Daniel's psyche. And the way that the show is constructed, you know, it starts off with Daniel getting out of prison and his life beginning at that point. In episode 1, it's day 1 out of prison.
Right.
However, he has these flashback-type moments where he's contemplating his past, and, you know, you see him go into thought, and then, boom, we're back in the prison, and it's in his past. And it's always directly related to what's going on with him at that moment in the present time, and how he's struggling with the reality of the real world versus this 19 years of hell that he was in. And yeah, the other neighbor, Kerwin, who is, as you described, the angel on his other shoulder, he's also a convicted felon. You know, he's a murderer, but he's not a psychopath. He's just a kid that screwed up and, you know, made a huge mistake with his life. Unfortunately, the consequences are the same for him as it is for me. You know, we're stuck in prison and we're both on death row. Daniel has a very hard time coming to grips with the reality of the world that most of us all live in outside of the prison.
Right.
We all, you know, and how did, and he's been sitting there waiting all these years to die, never contemplating that he would ever see the outside world again, or his family again, or anything like that. And he didn't, he hasn't, quote unquote, given in to Wendell's world, but it has definitely, definitely affected his worldview while he's been in there.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of confusion for him.
I think that's one of the reasons why I like the show so much, and one of the reasons why I keep telling people to watch it is because it is about, you know, we have these situations nowadays where there are a lot of people that are getting off because of, you know, new DNA evidence or new things that have come up, and you cannot imagine what it's like for that person. And that's, I love how they go and do the flashbacks. I love the flashbacks. I love seeing that kind of stuff because it really puts in perspective for you, like, man, that's some rough shit that he just had to go through for the last 19 years.
Sure. I mean, I just watched an interview with this man, Glenn Ford, in Texas. Did you read about that or see that this week, this past week? He was released after 34 years of wrongful imprisonment for a murder he did not commit. The man's 64 years old now. And I just was listening to this interview with him, and, you know, and they asked him, what's the hardest thing for you to deal with? He's like, cell phones, the internet. I can't do anything. All I've done is, you know, I can't get a driver's license. I'm too old to work. You know, I may be getting some money from the state, but, you know, what? You know, what do I do? What do I do?
Right.
You know,
yeah, I watched a documentary on Netflix not that long ago that was a similar situation. It was something that she didn't do. They finally got her out, but she ended up having cancer and only lived about 11 months after she got out, but they ended up finding her not guilty and all that stuff. It's sad.
It is.
Yep.
Thank God for the Justice Project, you know, the DNA evidence and things like that. It's been helping a lot of people. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right? Get the wrong people. Let's get the right people behind bars and the wrong people out. Okay, anyways.
Yeah.
What's it like filming on location around where you grew up? So everybody knows listening, Jason is from Atlanta. So we talked about Georgia a little bit before, but Jason is from Atlanta. The show is filmed here in Georgia. So what's that like?
Oh, it's great. It's a double-edged sword because I am a local, so I'm not flown in. I'm not put up in a hotel. I don't have a driver. You know, I don't have all of that the out-of-town people get. So, you know, all of the work that I've done on the show has been what's called a day play. In other words, I go in, I work one day, and then I'm off for a week or two or three or four. You know, it depends on if I'm in an episode or not. But typically, with one exception, I've only worked one day per episode. So that's kind of the negative side because, you know, financially, I can't complain. I'm on a wonderful show with a wonderful role, but, you know, financially, it's not the greatest pay in the world for what the other people are getting paid who are brought in from out of town. But
right.
The positive is that I come home and sleep in my bed at night. You know, I've got my car there. I can come and go as I please. And it's, you know, that's nice. I'm sitting on my patio right now behind my house enjoying this beautiful day. I'm not sitting in some hotel room, you know, in Griffin or an apartment that I rented or something like that. So
Right.
It's nice to be local. Yeah, well, nothing wrong with Griffin. Griffin's a beautiful town. Don't let that come out the wrong way. And what's been nice is Aiden Young, the star of the show, has rented this amazing house south of Griffin on 100 acres, this 100-year-old house that he's rented for the stay of we're shooting until May 15th on the second season. And he and I have become really good friends. And he's like, dude, you know, if you're tired, just come crash here. And I have. I've taken him up on it on several occasions, which has been really nice because it's still an hour and a half drive back to the north side of Atlanta where I live.
Right.
But it's really
That's
nice
cool.
to be
That's
able to
very
work.
Cool.
It's nice to be able to, you know, be in Atlanta and actually be a working actor. It's beautiful. I love it.
Well, that takes me right into the next question then. So as an Atlanta native, I guess you've noticed, we've had so much stuff film here in the last few years. So how do you feel about the progression of the film industry here, and where do you see it headed?
I couldn't be happier. You know, I've been acting since I was 9 years old and doing theater and stuff growing up and kind of got into film and TV back when Heat of the Night was being shot here. Way back in the day,
right.
And then when that,
that
when
was
that left town, what's that?
That was filmed
right
where near,
yeah, right yeah. near where you live, exactly. And I never worked on that show, but I had a lot of friends who did. And when that left town, pretty much it was over, and nothing happened for years. And honestly, I'd kind of gotten out of the business. I was still doing theater from time to time, but when the tax incentive program was put through and passed about almost 6 years ago, it changed everything. And it's funny because I was with a different agency at the time, and my agent called them and said, hey, you know, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And they're like, well, are you in or are you out? What are you going to do? I said, you know, there's all this work starting to come to town. You need to make a decision. I'm like, all right, fine. You know, my headshots were 10 years old. I hadn't done anything around that. And so I geared all that stuff back up again. And in the interim, I'd gotten married, and my poor wife, bless her heart, had never experienced me as a full-time actor like I am now. And she's like, so what does all this entail? And I'm like, well, I'm going to do this, and blah, blah, blah. She's like, so you're going to be doing that and your other job? And I'm like, yes. And you're going to do theater, and you're gone how many nights a week? And so it's been a challenge.
Aww.
But now that, you know, Rectify changed a lot of things for me because it's the first recurring television type role I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not enough to make me rich or anything for, you know, at all, but it is definitely best job I've ever had as an actor, I can tell you that. And to get back to your question, I feel wonderful about the film and TV industry here in Atlanta. It's growing every day. It's going to get bigger than people can imagine. They're building all these studios around the city. And as long as the legislature in Georgia keeps this thing going and the people who made it happen, who are from the Georgia Production Partnership, people like Rick Wrights and Wilbur Fitzgerald and Shea Griffin and others who have made this happen for us, they stay on their job and we help them, it will stay here. Because there's been a lot of infrastructure built. There's been ton of money spent here to make sure that it stays. And I can't.
Right.
I couldn't be more excited. Couldn't be more excited.
I agree.
And
I don't want to have to.
You know, I tried living in L.A. in the early 90s to try to be an actor out there, and I made a lot of really good friends, but I didn't like living out there, and I love living here, and it's just great to be able to do what I'm doing here. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I've actually had a couple of people say the same thing, that they like really just being in Georgia, that it just feels like homey, like it doesn't feel like you're in a place where you have to be something you're not, like it just feels more, because I mean, if people don't know a lot about the South, we are very nice people for the most part. People in the South are very friendly. People in the South are very friendly, so, you know. And hard workers. I mean, I see it all the
time.
Absolutely. I've been an extra a couple of times just to experience it. And the crew is like insane how hard they work. It's crazy.
I can't even imagine. You know, I call it a film crew, you know, a good film crew, which is knock wood. I've only had the experience of working with really good professional crews, which is usually how it is here. My definition is it's a love child between the military and the circus. And that's because they're just wild and crazy and fun-loving and extremely disciplined at the same time. It's really amazing.
That's a good way to reference it. I like it. I might have to use that.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I'll have to use that.
Yeah, with military rules, it works really well. Everybody knows their job. Everybody does their job really well. And you want for nothing. Everything's taken care of. Just spot on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything about season 2 of Rectify that you are allowed to tell us?
Well, not in. I can give you some generalizations. One of the complaints that the few complaints that we heard about Rectify season 1 is like, my God, this is slow. It's amazing. I'm mesmerized. I can't stop watching it, but my God, this is slow. Because there was only 6 episodes in the first season, which covered the first 7 days of Daniel's life outside of prison. It moved that slow, but it worked. It worked really well.
Oh, I believe it worked.
And spoiler alert here, everybody, so, you know, turn the volume down for a second. At the end of the first season, Daniel gets beat up really bad and hauled off in an ambulance. So he's in the hospital. You assume. And so if the pace stayed the same in season 2 with only 10 episodes, you know, who wants to watch 10 episodes of him sitting in a hospital bed? So all I can tell you is the time speeds up in season 2.
Okay.
We don't go one day at a time. It starts moving faster, a little bit further down the road. And Daniel starts really coming to grips with dealing with the reality of the world that he now lives in. That's, you know, and how it's affected the town of Pauley, the fictional town of Pauley, Georgia, and how it's affecting his family and how it's affecting him. And he's really having a hard time coming to grips with who he is and how he fits into all this. That's really where season 2 is going. And there's a little bit more dealing with, you know, the crime itself, which a lot of people were saying, well, you know, what's the deal? We kind of, nothing's going on with that. Well, more will be going on with that in season 2.
Yeah, because there's definitely some things that happened in season 1, for those of you who haven't watched yet, that are unanswered as far as that goes.
Right.
So I imagine they are going to dive into that a little bit. Well, that is cool.
Yeah,
that's
a little
really
bit
cool.
For the mystery, yeah.
I'm glad to hear you guys are getting 10 episodes. That's awesome.
Yeah, very excited.
So the first season is only 6, guys, so there's no excuse to watch it. You can watch it on a Wednesday night when you have nothing else to do. You know, we all binge watch Netflix all the time. It is on Netflix right now, so you can watch it for free, and there's no excuse. So everybody go and watch it, seriously. I tweet about it all the time.
Netflix has definitely jumped the viewership way up, because a lot of people, when they say, what channel is that on? Like, it's on the Sundance Channel. And the answer is always like, I think I have the Sundance Channel. You know, people don't even know they have it, because this is the first, they're just now, they've got the Red Road, they had Top of the Lake, and there's a couple of other shows coming up soon. So they've just really delved in, and the Returned, these shows that Sundance is delving into, you know, scripted drama. So it's a great channel. Unfortunately, in Atlanta, it's all low def. There's no high def in Atlanta on the actual Sundance channel, as far as I know. But it is high def on Netflix and iTunes and other places where you can get it.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right, so everybody go check that out. Okay?
Yep.
So everybody check out Rex Brown on Netflix, which I have tweeted about 100 times, so all of my friends better be watching it by now.
Yes.
Before I let you go, I want you to talk about any other projects you got going on. I know you just did a movie called Heavy Water, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure. This is a grassroots Atlanta project I'm very proud to be a part of. I haven't seen a single frame of it yet, and it's very close to being completed. This was a film written and directed by a young man named Andrew Donahoe, and when I say young man, he's in his early 20s, and he put together a crew of professional, cinematographers, set dressing. The whole crew is pros who have agreed to work for practically nothing. We shot the whole thing in about 4 weeks last July, August of 2013, and they just finished. They had a few pickup scenes they had to shoot, which they shot on the beach. They were going to do it in Savannah, but there was some complications. They ended up actually shooting it out in Malibu because all the cast was out there for pilot season. And all we've got left to do now is some ADR and some color correction, and I've been told that, and I'm part of that ADR, and it hasn't been done yet, that we should be seeing something by May. And I'm very excited, and it's, I play a character named Mickey, who's a homeless man and used to be a former addict and that sort of thing, and I'm kind of the sidekick of the lead dude. His name is Carter Jenkins, a very good young actor, who is originally from Atlanta but is living in L.A. now. You can look him up on IMDb and see his resume. And also stars Jake the Snake, a former professional wrestler who plays one of the bad guys in it. It's kind of fun. I have no idea how it's going to turn out, but if the trailer is any evidence of what it's going to look like, it's going to look really cool. The script is a bit odd. But it should be an interesting story.
Well, that's awesome. If you guys decide to do, like, an Atlanta premiere, I know a lot of local movies do premieres and stuff, hit us up. We'd love to come out and cover it. That'd be a lot of fun. We've done a couple of them before. We have a local friend named Rob Poglo. He's done a couple of movies. Yeah, we've been to his premieres.
Rob
and
I are good friends.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob's a great guy. We've been interviewing Rob since about 2010. He's been coming on and talking about all of his projects. Yeah, so, yeah,
oh, yeah.
I love Rob to death. So, yeah, we'd love to come out and support you and do that and anything to support Atlanta, really, because, as I said, I'm a native, too, so I'm from Georgia, and I love it. So I appreciate it. Well, I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Amber. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you, and enjoy your afternoon on your porch because it is a nice day.
I will.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.